Yeah. You guys are going to talk a lot when I'm here. Every time I ask a question, I'm going to go, what's the answer?
Hello. What's all this?
We're trying to figure out where everybody's at.
Yeah.
John was here and then John was gone.
Here he is.
Yeah, I was telling him, every time I ask a question, I'm just going to look over here and just going to go. Alright, so let's say a prayer and we'll get started. Dear God, thank you for today, for all that you do for us. Thank you for this time we have to come together to look at your word and to learn what you want us to from it. Pray that we'll open our hearts and our minds and our eyes and be able to see things maybe we haven't seen before. Maybe we did our lesson, maybe we read this 7 or 8 times in our life, and I pray that there's things that we talk about or things that our friends say or things we bring to light that encourage us or something different and new that can be applicable to our lives to be able to ultimately do what you want us to do, which is be right with you and live right by you and on Jesus and all that we do. Pray that we have a good day and a safe day in Jesus' name, amen. All right, so I said that I was going to try to, I said a couple things. I want to clarify really quick a couple things from class. Number one, I supposedly said I was going to wear this for Halloween. I'm so not going to wear this for Halloween next year. So it's the first thing I need to clarify. And the second thing I need to clarify is, I think I said I could probably talk for like 10 minutes or something like that, and I'm pretty sure it's not going to be 10 minutes, if that's okay with you. I got to looking at this, and I was like, you know, I could probably teach like 2 more classes, because we're only going to get so far, and then we're not even going to get into just what I call the really, really good stuff, because I don't think I'm going to get there. So I'm going to talk for a little bit, and then at some point, Abby's in charge of like cutting me off. Because in the car today on the way here, we're talking with my wife and Alex. And then Jennifer, my wife, tells Abby, she says, now listen, he says 10 minutes. You like try to hold him to 10 minutes. So if y'all see Abby over here like doing this, you know, she's trying to keep us on track, but it's not going to happen. So
don't worry about it. You're fine.
Yeah, so we're still going over 10 minutes. So anyway, so that was the thing I wanted to clarify really quick. So to bring us to speed to where we were before, we were talking about Cornelius, and I want to just finish the point that we were talking about he was asked to go to Joppa or to go get Peter from Joppa. And maybe this is the better one. So Caesarea is 30 miles from Joppa. So we were talking about in general what a big ask this was. It wasn't just, you know, walk across the room or, hey, if you got a dollar, can you go, you know, get this? He was supposed to go find a man in a city he had never met or heard of. And, you know, the angel didn't give him a bio of Peter's accomplishments. He didn't tell him how great he was or how bad he was. Just right off the bat, he told him to go get this man that he knew nothing about in general. He told him it was by the sea. As you can see, we talked about the other night, right at the end, the whole thing is pretty much on the sea. So, like, you know, where exactly is that? How are we going to pinpoint that? It's 30 miles. So think about that for 1 second. 30 miles from us right now, where we're standing, do you know where you would be? In a certain direction, you'd be in a completely different state. Less than 30 miles from here, you're in Tennessee. So I want us to put our minds around what this big ask it was. For him to just go and do that. And all this effort and all these other things, it says in verse 8, and having related everything to the people he was sending, he sent them to Joppa. So he did it. He did exactly what the angel told him to do. He obeyed. That's ultimately what I wanted to get at for that. So that's kind of where we were. That was finishing up that thought. I think I kind of finished that a little bit, sort of, but that's kind of an extra piece of it. I think there was a couple things I didn't say. So, meanwhile, in Joppa, these other things are happening. Let's read Acts 10, 9 through 16. Is anybody who would go to phone? Thanks. So it's 9 through 16.
The next day, as they were on their journey and approaching the city, Peter went up to the housetop about the sixth hour to pray. And he became hungry and had something to eat. But while they were preparing it, he fell into a trance and saw the heavens open and something like a great sheet descending, being let down by its four quarters upon the earth. In it were all kinds of animals and reptiles and birds of the air. And there was a voice to him, "Rise, Peter, kill and eat." But Peter said, "By no means, Lord, for I have never eaten anything that is common or unclean." And the voice came to him again a second time, "What God has made clean, do not call common." This happened three times, and the thing was taken up at once to heaven.
So very strange happenings. Has anyone ever seen something just float down out of the sky? I mean, this is par for the course. Peter has seen a lot of things that are different, new, and strange, right? So I'm sure in the middle of this, you know, notice it doesn't say, remember we're talking about Cornelius, whenever the angel came, he was like scared, like he was just, you know, scared, frozen. We've talked about different people, how they have these different interactions with God and angels, and they're like just, and visions even, and they're just scared to death. Peter just rolls with this one. You know, it doesn't at any point say he was just flabbergasted and shocked. My point is he knew who it was from, and he was ready to act upon it. You know, rather than, you know, if you or I were to go through that, or some other people, you know, you kind of got to get through the whole shock thing first, and then you're able to maybe absorb. He's been through so many different things, he's ready to just kind of, hey, I know who this is coming from. You know, that tells you, to me, a little bit of his testament of his faith. He knew God was, you know, leading him in the right direction towards something. So, where was Peter? And by the way, Joppa is not the answer I'm looking for. So, where was Peter whenever this happened?
A housetop.
A housetop, yep. He was on the roof. And in general, that was something that's very normal. You know, have you ever gone on top of your roof?
No.
Every once in a while, you hang out on your roof. I think there's been TV shows where, you know, people climbed out of their bedroom window and sat on their roof, but nobody does that. I mean, nobody really does that, right? If you ever had a friend that told you, "Hey, what'd you do yesterday? I just climbed out on my roof and I hung out there for 3.5 hours or something like that," you'd be like, "You are crazy." Like, nobody does that, except for very few. But back then, you know, that was a normal thing to be able to go up on a roof. That was pretty normal. So what was he doing? Why did he go to the roof? He didn't go up there to shoot a TV show, like I said, you know, or to come up with a good story or whatever. Why was he up on the roof? He went there to pray. And what other little tidbit did he add in there? Did they add in there about Peter? He was what?
Hungry.
Hungry at the time. So why do you think he was praying on the roof, just for fun? What's your thoughts about that? Why do you think he was praying on the roof?
Privacy,
probably, yeah. There's not a wrong answer, by the way. And there's nothing you're going to find listed on in the Bible about it. I just wondered if you had any thoughts, like, that's why he went. In my mind, you know, one is for privacy, and then sometimes, I don't know if he would have done this, but, you know, sometimes, yes?
To be closer, like, he's higher up, so he would be closer to God.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. That's another level of it, too, to be closer, higher up to God. In some ways, you know, I can't read Peter's mind, but, you know, he's seen Jesus do what when he goes to pray? Go by himself and go up on a mountain. So, yeah, I can see where, you know, that's his mountaintop where he's at, you know. I don't know necessarily if would he have thought to have been, and this is a general question, would he have been praying in any general direction?
Doesn't specify,
but I'm throwing it out there that if he was, I guess my thought is, if he was, you could probably see it best from the rooftop, right? Not from the living room or something else. So all these pieces are aid to why he's there, to why he's up on the rooftop. And it's important that he's up there to be able to kind of fully, you know, see this vision. That would be really freaky if it was just coming through the dining room ceiling, you know, this thing. So it aids to the what happens next. So he fell into a trance, is what it says. So what does it say happens after that?
He saw the heavens open up, something like a great sheet descended.
So what it tells him is this. Let me see my first thing. So the sheet comes out, and you know, I've talked in the class many times about searching for pictures and all kinds of stuff. There's a mazillion pictures of this in some different aspects. There's some that show, you know, certain types of animals in detail and some really strange animals and things like that. You know, I just chose just a general, you know, thing where you really can't tell what all this stuff is in the sheet. There's a lot of different I guess visual things of what people think of the sheet is, you know, in the pictures I found. So I just kind of went with this one. A lot of them really emphasize the four corners on the picture. They tried to do it. So I'm sure if all of us closed our eyes and we had to draw what we thought the sheet would look like, I guarantee we'd come up with 12 or more like different looking things. So this is just the idea of how it's coming, not really anything to tell you that's exactly what it looked like or any of that other kind of fun stuff. So, let's just do this. So, all of these animals are coming down in the sheet, and the voice says, you know, Peter, rise and eat, or whatever. So, why do you think he refused? And in general, what did he say? Tell me that first. What did he say? Did he just say, no, thank you? Or did he say, you know, I haven't had that in a while. That kind of hurts my stomach. I really don't. You know. Like, what did he say?
He hasn't eaten anything unclean or common.
Yeah. He hadn't eaten anything unclean or common. So that's correct. But what's the first thing he says?
By no means.
So to translate that, like if you're hanging out with your friends and you go to like a new taco place and they've got like some kind of a fancy, chili or red sauce or something, like, yeah, you know, this hot stuff. You know, I think people have gone to the ER after eating this. Why don't you try one? By no means. You know, this is the kind of thing that you'd say if he was with your friends, like, absolutely not. I'm not eating that. There's no way. I'm not that, you know, adventurous of an eater. I'm not going to. This is what he's saying it in protest. He's basically saying in some way, never, no way. Like, what are you asking of me? You know, it's almost another, it's definitely not a no thank you, is my point. Because he's saying no. And he's saying, I've never done this, kind of, why would you ask me that? You know, that's kind of a strange thought. Okay, so let's go this direction. So Peter's refused. You know, it's beyond a polite no thank you, right? He's basically saying, no, this is not what I'm supposed to do. I've never done this. I've never crossed this line before. So Peter's refusal, did it seem reasonable to Peter? Did he think he had good ground to stand on when he said that?
I mean, it's kind of typical Peter stuff. He's been dealing with Jesus for past so many years, so he's kind of gotten used to these tests from deity, and he thinks he always knows the answer, but it's always something different.
Mm-hmm. I like how you said that. He thinks he always knows the answer. Because in a lot of times, he's real confident about stuff, sort of. But you're right. A lot of times, it is something different. This is another example of that. Like, He's refusing to eat, but why does that seem normal to him? So you're right, and this is his normal MO, that's what he does, is stand for things, and sometimes it's kind of wrong, but why does he think that that's reasonable? What's if you're Peter, what's your argument back? I'm not going to eat it, and here's why. I said this, and here's why.
Jewish tradition.
Jewish tradition, right. So can you elaborate on that? What was the Jewish tradition?
To not eat unclean animals, and then they were deemed unclean, like from the Old Testament.
Right. So in general, had Peter ever seen anyone eat bacon? Think about that for a minute. You guys like bacon? I know you don't. You like bacon? But he had never even seen that, or thought of that, or heard of that. Just like there's different parts around the world that are eating, you know, different things. Right now, and we're like, wow, never heard of that. You know, that would be, it would be really foreign in some places if we took them a chicken patty that was breaded and fried and handed to someone to eat. They would think that's strange, just like we think it's strange that he maybe has never eaten a lot of these things, but that's the stance he comes from. That's his background, yeah.
I've always thought of it as, you know, in like the Asian countries where they eat like fried bugs and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I would think of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of sea-bearing cities that's kind of like Japan, for example. There are things that are really exquisite in Japan that, man, I don't think you could pay me to eat, like, certain things, you know, like squid tentacles, and I'm not going to make anybody sit on stuff like that. Some people are real squeamish about that stuff, but it's really something. You know, like, if you were to go out in Japan and on a nice dinner and someone took you and you refused to eat the tentacles, you know, you might as well just spit in their face and kick their mom down to the ground. I mean, you're just not, you know, would be a big no-no, but that's what they're used to. And that's what they know. And in this situation, I just want us to understand that the reason why Peter was, if you think about it, I hope you see it this way, was like, hey, no way, uh-uh. And it wasn't just a, no, thank you. There's a difference between those two. And I want you to understand where he comes from, that stance. Whenever he has it. He is Peter, but he isn't necessarily typical Peter here because his answer is rooted in his experience in life, not necessarily ignorance or not wanting to follow what God is telling him to do. Did you have another comment or not? Or did you? Were you just...
I was just going to say, one thing I find interesting, it is going back a tad, like McDonald's. McDonald's has a different menu in different countries to cater to the locals. So like here we have the Big Mac is the big thing and all these cheeseburgers, but in India they don't have any of that. It's all fish sandwiches and stuff like that. So I think that itself reflects the differences in the way we eat around the world. You can look up like what's McDonald's menu in this country and you'll see it's just totally different. So, yeah.
It's a completely different to the different flavors. So I'll make one comment about McDonald's really quick. Have you seen it? Has anybody been to McDonald's in the last 6 months?
No.
No. If you've gone through the drive-thru or looked at it, they have like this McFlurry that's a Chips Ahoy. I don't know if you've seen the picture. It's got a picture of Chips Ahoy. It's got in the background, it's got some kind of a graham cracker and a caramel swirled through it or whatever. Have you seen that picture? Abby said, yeah. It just reminded me of that. That was something that I was reading. Like, I'm into food, like with my job, and we talk about trends, and that trend of that exact McFlurry came from Holland. That was the country where those flavors were put together, and they did some testing, and they found that, like, McDonald's is pretty smart. If they find something works someplace, it doesn't necessarily mean that's where it stays. They try to, you know, see where it goes, and that's where that one started, was in Holland. To put all those flavors together. So next time you go through McDonald's drive-thru, I guarantee you'll be like, oh, that's interesting. But anyway, second story, if you ever go to Disney World, there's a place called Epcot, and they have World of Coke. And you can actually go in there. Have any of y'all been? I'm seeing some nods. And they have all these spouts. And you can go over, and each spout, you know, like if you go to You ever been to like Zaxby's or well, they got those touch things now, but the ones where you go psh, 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 psh. So they've got all the psh, psh, psh things, and it'll say Africa, and then you walk over here, and it'll say Australia, and you'll go to another one that's the ones in that company, and they all taste terrible. They're all awful. Like at first, the picture looks good, or the name, you try it, it's bad. And you know why? It's not that they're bad. You know what the truth is? Because that's what I'm used to. I'm not used to that. I'm not used to those spices. I'm not used to those flavors. I like my good old Dr. Pepper and Coke like they make it here. And they think the same of our stuff. But anyway, if you ever get a chance, it's fun and interesting to try that. So I digress. So, he refused. It seemed very reasonable to him. He's not in defiance to God. In some weird way, maybe he thought he was being tested, like he should stand for what's right. Could you believe that? Maybe. But his refusal, he's got every leg to stand on. He thinks this is exactly what I'm supposed to say, because he's a good Jew, good Jewish person. So whenever he said that, did it seem reasonable to the voice or God? Did it seem reasonable? Did the voice go, rise, Peter, you know, eat? And he goes, no thanks, I'm good. And the voice say, all right, I'll come check on you later. What did the voice say?
What God has made clean, do not call common.
What God has made clean, do not call common. So what does that mean in general? So what's the translation of what that means?
I mean, it's
what does it mean to you guys?
It's addressing both of Peter's issues. I mean, Peter says, I've never eaten anything common or unclean. And then they immediately address the unclean part by saying, what God has made clean, do not call common. And kind of flipping both of those words on its head and saying, no, this is from God. This is what we're doing now.
Mm-hmm. I like how you said that for both his issues. Yeah. Any other thoughts on that? Yeah.
I just thought about this, but we were talking about earlier how Peter was like said the Jewish thing, said, no, I've never eaten anything like that. And that's almost insulting to God, because we know God doesn't tempt people, and whatever God says is what, you know, is law. Mm-hmm. And so for Peter to say, no, I'm a good Jewish person, I know better, I'm not going to do what you say, it's pretty insulting to God, who has given him a direct command. Mm-hmm. So I just thought of that.
That's good. I like your thought. I hadn't necessarily thought of that. You're right. He should know, as we should all know, right? God doesn't tempt you. Good. Very good thought. Really good.
And I think it's kind of important that it's happening now, before he goes on to like the rest of his journey teaching, because I mean I think this applies to the Gentiles. I mean, in the Jewish mind, mm-hmm. they're kind of become.
Now you remember how in our last class we talked about the roles, you know, truth's role, and you know, Peter's role, and God's role. And God's role, this is all a plan. And this is all part of his plan. So you're spot on. This is a perfect, looking back, look, this is a perfect time, because God's decision's got to be perfect, right? To drop this in and get this kind of rolling and moving, especially with what's getting ready to happen here in a little bit.
Maybe a good way of us understanding what he was up against is if we had a vision and we were told to eat hamburgers and Cokes for the Lord's Supper, I mean, that would just, we would never consider that, because that would be irreverent and mm-hmm. unholy.
Yeah.
And that's how he's viewing this. You know.
You said it so much better than me. No. That's kind of where I was going in general. But that's exactly, no, I mean, like, I said a bunch of stuff before that, and then, like, that's exactly it. He would think it would be irreverent. I like your word. That's exactly it. That's why he would think it's reasonable, is because this is completely irreverent. So you bring it home. I was talking in general about the Jewish, you know, thoughts. But to translate, it would be completely irreverent. So you're right. Good. Great point. I like your word the best. So we agree. It didn't really seem reasonable to him, right? Because he says, what God has made clean, do not call common. So, how many times did the refusal from Peter and the reaffirmation from the voice occur? How many times did this cycle happen?
Three times.
Happened three times. So it's not like, you know, 10 minutes later, Peter could go, can't remember which one he, did he say that? I don't know, that happened so quickly. Or, you know, Peter couldn't say, I'm really unclear with what he meant by clean or unclean. You know, I don't know what, you know, God was trying to tell me. You know, three times, you know. Has anyone told you anything once and you kind of maybe forgot? Like in a class, you ever had a teacher at the very beginning of the class and you were still opening up your notebook or something, they said, oh, we're going to have a quiz next Tuesday. And never mentioned it again. Has that ever happened to you? Something, or you were talking to your friends, you walk into class on Tuesday, and you'd be like, what are you doing? I'm ready for the quiz. What quiz? Well, they talked about it, I got it in my notes. What are you talking about? I missed that. Has that ever happened? Great man, me, happened. Things like that have happened before. It happens in life. If somebody tells you something twice, if you notice, a lot of speakers, they'll say something twice. A lot of times when they say something twice, that means they want you to definitely remember that point. They'll say it twice. They'll say it twice. You ever notice that? They'll repeat it. It's because they definitely don't want you to remember that piece. Because it either applies what they're getting ready to say, or that's their main point. That's two. But if somebody tells you something three times, I don't know about you, but whenever you were a lot younger, did you have to clean your room or mow the yard? Or something like that. You got told once. If you got told twice, you were in big trouble. And if you got told three times, I'm lucky I'm alive. I don't know about you guys. It doesn't happen that much, right? So you see where I'm going? The more that you're told, the more serious the item. The more they want you to understand and remember. So he was told three times by the voice. Shouldn't be any confusion here, right? I mean, we are talking to Peter. Peter's confused several things in the past. So here's a sideways thought I had. Do you have any thoughts on threes? There's a lot of threes in the Bible. God, the Holy Spirit, Jesus. But I'm going to go ahead and, spoiler alert, all these are about threes. Whatever you do, okay? Jesus rose on the third day. Peter, James, and John, they were the only three witnesses of the transfiguration. 3 hours of darkness while he was on the cross. Peter denied Jesus how many times?
Three.
Only three angels mentioned by name in the Bible. Jesus prayed three times in the Garden of Gethsemane. Samuel called God, was called by God three times. Remember whenever he was being called and he kept going to Eli and saying, did you call me? And he's like, no, I didn't call you. And he's like, went back, and he's like, no, I didn't call you. And the third, he said, no, wait a minute. Next time you say, I'm here, remember that story? Three times. Ark of the Covenant contained three items. Gifts to the infant Jesus, three items. Peter, do you love me? How many times did he ask him? Elijah prepared, this is one of my favorite stories. Elijah prepared the sacrifice while challenging the Baal worshippers. Do you remember that? And he had the people drench the wood and the bull once, twice, and then a third time. That's exactly the wording that it gives you. It doesn't say three times. It tells you just that process to drive home that this really did happen three times. So, do you have any thoughts on threes? Now, one thing is, it's interesting. And I don't know if you can tell, anything that's bold, I should have made this bigger. Can y'all see the bold ones? Bold. And I also have italics. Can you see italics very well? This is italics. Doesn't look too much different, does it? So, sorry, messed the visual up. Anytime there's bold, Peter's involved. Anytime there's italics, Peter's involved. And if you look down through there, about half of them are bold italics. Peter's seen three a lot, is my point. It may mean nothing. You know, Peter's not sitting there going, listen, I'm waiting for that third time something's happening because that's from God, it's my sign. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is this. In the Bible, the number three is used 467 times. There's only one other number that I'm aware of that's used more. And that's seven, I think, is used more than that. That's a whole lot of times. And there's a reason that it's used. And it's because of that last sentence. It pictures completeness. So what I want us to think about is threes happen a lot, but to the story that we're at, where we're talking about how God told him three times, what God has made clean, do not make common. By it happening three times, number one, that's telling you it's really important. We all agreed on that, right? And then the second thing is, basically this. Peter, that's all I got to say about this. And that's the way it is. Now, if I was a really good teacher, I'd come up with a third part. But we're just going to start with the two. Any questions about... Yeah?
Well, there's three men that came to get him right after that.
Yeah?
He makes three claims. No, it's unclean and it's uncommon.
You go, you get my measure and gold star for the day to catch it. Good job. I like that. See, there's a lot of different threes going on here. Great point. But back to the main thing. That's what I want us to understand is when God tells him this about I've made this clean, don't call it common. This is all I've said about this, and there's no more to be said. This is my decision. This is what I want you to think and do. Any questions else about three? No? Great comments. Thank you for your thoughts. I appreciate that. That's good. Let's read Acts 10:17 through 33. Any volunteers? You got it?
Sure.
I'll get you on the next one because we got another view.
Now, while Peter was inwardly perplexed as to what the vision that he had seen might mean, behold, the men who were sent by Cornelius, having made inquiry for Simon's house, stood at the gate and called out to ask whether Simon, who was called Peter, was lodging there. And while Peter was pondering the vision, the Spirit said to him, behold, three men are looking for you. Rise and go down and accompany them without hesitation, for I have sent them. And Peter went down to the men and said, I'm the one you are looking for. What is the reason for your coming? And they said, Cornelius, a centurion, an upright and God-fearing man, who is well spoken of by the whole Jewish nation, and was directed by a holy angel to send for you, to come to his house and to hear what you have to say. So he invited them in to be his guests. The next day he rose and went away with them, and some of the brothers from Joppa accompanied him. And on the following day they entered Caesarea. Cornelius was expecting them and called together his relatives and close friends. When Peter entered, Cornelius met him and fell down at his feet and worshipped him. But Peter lifted him up, saying, Stand up, I too am a man. And as he talked with him, he went in and found many persons gathered. And he said to them, You yourselves know how unlawful it is for a Jew to associate with or to visit anyone of another nation. But God has shown me that I should not call any person common or unclean. So when I was sent for, I came without objection. I asked then why you sent for me. And Cornelius said, 4 days ago, about this hour, I was praying in my house at the ninth hour, and behold, a man stood before me in bright clothing and said, Cornelius, your prayer has been heard and your alms have been remembered before God. Send therefore to Joppa and ask for Simon, who is called Peter. He is lodging in the house of Simon, a tanner, by the sea. So I sent for you at once, and you have been kind enough to come. Now therefore, we are all here in the presence of God to hear all that you have been commanded by the Lord.
Phew, a whole bunch of stuff going on there, right? So first thing I want to talk about is right at the beginning, you know, Peter's is, this is, and it talks about it in the verses before, but this is about the sixth hour is what it says. A couple of verses above when it says he goes up to the roof. So let's get this straight. So basically, whenever Cornelius was told what he was told, it was about noon, and let's just say it was Tuesday. And so whenever these men come, it was about 3 o'clock. Peter, about sixth hour. Yeah, I read that backwards on my notes. So Cornelius basically was talked to about 3 p.m. in the afternoon. Again, let's pick Tuesday. And these people are rolling up on Peter's place noon the next day. That's pretty fast. Remember we were talking about, you know, 30 miles and stuff like that. How long do you think it'd take you to walk to Tennessee from here? You know, at a good pace, you know, up and down the hill or whatever. You know, that's pretty fast. My point in that is, you know, he's obeying and they were on a mission. And that tells you a lot about Cornelius. Again, that the people underneath him are going to do exactly what he says. They didn't meander around. They didn't go watch a movie, you know, in the middle of it. Let's go over here. We'll watch a movie and then we'll go find him. No, they immediately did what he said. That speaks to what they thought of him. They respected him to be able to do that. Now, as we enter the scene here, Peter is still unsure. I think the words it says, inwardly perplexed. He was still unsure about what all this meant. Because, you know, we've talked about the different ramifications about, you know, good Jew, bad Jew, whether it's, you know, you've never eaten it, and what Mike was talking about too, like all that. So he was still thinking about it. But, you know, the Spirit's guiding him. And I think it's really interesting that as these guys roll up, and it says, and while Peter was pondering the vision, the Spirit said to him, behold, 3 men are looking for you. So he just walks out, and he does something that I would think considered like in Jesus fashion. Do you remember how a lot of times Jesus would like read people's minds, and he'd tell you who you are and all that kind of stuff before you even knew it? He came out here, and he says, Peter went down to the men and said, I'm the one you're looking for. You know? Because they were at the gate and he's on the roof. You know, he's not listening to every word they say, right? He knew exactly who that they're looking for. And then, because the Spirit, if you will, said, you know, go down and meet these men. So Peter took them in, and it says that they left the next day. So Peter wasn't as adamant to get on the road as Cornelius was to send people on the road. And that's just factual. That's one of those things. So, let me see. Yeah, one thing before we leave Cornelius, because I want to make sure that we talk about this. And I think we did, but we'll talk about it a little bit more, is Cornelius knew God, and he knew God was sending him a message. And what did Cornelius do next? He called together his relatives and close friends. Because he knew whenever Peter was coming, right? I didn't write down the verse, but we read that, right? Where he called together his relatives and his close friends. This is after Peter, you know, has gotten there. Cornelius' faith that God was sending him the truth. He had the faith to know that, hey, I'm not just sending for this person. Something's going to come from it. Remember we talked about that the other day, kind of? So, what I want us to think about today and walk away from today is this. Is asking ourselves questions about our faith. Do we have faith, not questioning it, but seeing what level of faith we have. And hopefully be encouraged to have the kind of faith like Cornelius. You see, we need the same faith as Cornelius. Every Sunday and Wednesday, there's this place called West End, the place we're standing or sitting in today. And the truth is here every day, but it's taught and communicated and delved into every Sunday and Wednesday. We have here the gospel truth. Do we invite our family? Do we invite our close friends like Cornelius did? Cornelius knew the truth was coming, right? And he invited these people to come and see, right? We know where truth is. Do we reach out and tell others? Do we take that chance? It's not like, you know, our brothers or sisters or mom and dad or whatever might be here. But notice, he didn't just invite the people that were, you know, his wife and their three kids and Aunt Judy, you know? It says the close friends. So here's the thought. Do we call our family and friends to come here every Sunday and Wednesday? Do we call our close friends to hear the truth? What advantage did Cornelius have that we don't? You might say, well, he had an angel, and he had a strong faith, all this other kind of stuff. You know, an angel didn't come to me and say, invite that person at the Houchins Checkout Center to come to church. The angel didn't come to me and say, you know, that girl that sits across from me in biology that seems like she might be open to come into church, and, you know, but I don't know. Nope. He had an angel, and he had faith. That's really what he had, right? Well, we have even more than that. Just right off the top, we have God's Word. We have the Bible. Like I've talked in several of our classes, and John might have, you know, we know the ending of the story. We should have a much stronger faith than Cornelius. And I'm afraid Cornelius puts some of us to shame sometimes. We have God's Word, we have Jesus' example, and we also have, if we're Christians, the ability and the desire we should have to have the same mission as Christ, is to seek and save the lost. We should seek to save the lost, whether that person who's working at Houchins or that girl that's in our biology class, or whether it's fill in the blank. We need to have the same fervor, the same faith that he did, Cornelius. It's something as simple as inviting them to come and hear the truth. That's all Cornelius did, right? Some of us, and when I say us, I'm just talking about people. I'm not, you know, looking at anybody. Are scared to sit down with someone, possibly to have like a Bible study, or teach a class, or do anything like that. And those are things that we can all work through in our lives to hopefully move to be able to do those things. Cornelius did the simplest thing. All he did was invite. Cornelius didn't have to write the invitation. Cornelius didn't have to pull scrolls out and highlight his favorite verses. Cornelius didn't have to plot, you know, what to say or what not to say. Cornelius didn't have to think about, well, you know, they go to XYZ type of religion, and I don't know if I should say anything about that because I don't want to hurt their feelings or any of that kind of stuff. And the list goes on and on and on and on and on. Cornelius didn't do any of those things. He knew what the truth was. He knew where it was coming from. And what did he do? He wanted to make sure that the people closest to him knew the truth. Think in your life, whoever is close to you, whether they're family or close friends. And, you know, I've invited people to church before that I've known for 4 hours. You don't have to be best buddies or whatever. You know where I'm going. It can even go even further than that. We should do the simplest thing like Cornelius did. Look for the opportunity. We know where the truth is shared every week. Let's make it an important part of our mindset.